Last time we saw how to describe a probabilistic mixture of states with a density operator. Which is a trace one positive operator. And the density operator was cool because the expectation value of any observable, this is the ensemble expectation, which includes not only quantum indeterminacy effects, but also the fact that you don't know exactly what the pure state is, that the expectation value of any operator, ensemble expectation, is just the trace of rho times A, true for any observable. And so that meant that the density operator gave up more or less complete statistical description of the properties of the system, given your state of knowledge about its preparation. And so what I want to start out today talking about, oh, and we also saw a lovely way of representing that for qubits, the block sphere. We got a little block vector that that told us what the density operator was. The outer parts of the sphere, those were all the pure states. And then the when we filled in the sphere and got the whole ball, that included all the possible mixed states of the qubit. And that was pretty neat. Today, I want to start by talking about a nice application of density operators, a useful application. And that's for that's what we might call thermal states. Okay, so the idea is that we have a system which has an internal Hamiltonian, but the system is also interacting with a thermal reservoir out in the environment. It's interacting with a thermal reservoir, and it's in equilibrium with that thermal reservoir, and it's in equilibrium with a reservoir at inverse temperature beta, which is, of course, 1 over Boltzmann's constant times the absolute temperature. Okay? And in this situation, you can argue that pretty generically, the state that you find for the system is the thermal density operator rho, the sub theta is to remind myself I'm talking about a thermal density operator, is a normalization constant called z e to the minus beta h. It's an exponential of the Hamiltonian. And by the way, this reminds me of time evolution operators, except that instead of inverse temperature here, I have I times time. And yes, indeed, there is a very strong formal connection between between thermodynamics and quantum dynamics. In one of them, time is imaginary. That's the difference. So, okay. Anyway, okay. So this is the density operator. This is the density operator. And so what is this normalization constant? Because I picked that normalization. I put something there because I want to make sure this thing's got trace one. So if I take the trace of this guy, I get 1 over z times the trace of that. That's got to be one. So that means that z here, which is our, it's called the partition function, but for our purposes, it's just the normalization constant. That's the trace of e to the minus beta h. Okay, so this is the density operator describing the state of the system in equilibrium. Yeah. Okay, I didn't give you a general definition, but a density any positive operator that has trace one is a legal density operator. It has to be a positive operator so that all the probabilities it predicts are all the populations in any basis, all the probabilities it predicts are non-negative, and it has to be trace 1 so that those probabilities sum to 1. And in this case, we've carefully chosen z so that this will be trace 1, and no matter what h is, this operator will be positive. So this is a good density operator. Let's look at this in the energy eigenbasis. Let's suppose that the internal Hamiltonian of the system has energy eigenstates, which we'll denote n. Then in that case, rho will be diagonal. Rho theta is diagonal. In fact, I can just write down what it is. Rho, I'll write it in its spectral form. Rho theta is the sum over n of e to the minus beta times the eigenvalue e sub n over z times n. And there are a number of things I can say about this. One thing is that I can get z. I can get z in a much simpler way by just doing a sum, the sum over n of e to the minus beta e sub n. That's okay. The second thing I want to point out, in this basis, the coherences, the off-diagonal elements, are all zero. The populations are these guys. The populations in this basis, p sub n, the nth guy along the diagonal, I'll call it p sub n, is e to the minus beta e sub n over z. And this looks like a mixture of energy eigenstates. It looks like this is just a mixture of these energy eigenstates with these probabilities. Okay? That's what this density operator looks like. And indeed, if you had such a mixture, this is the density operator you would use. But writing down this density operator is not asserting that that's the real state of affairs. When I say that a system is in equilibrium with a reservoir, okay, this tells me I can treat it as if it were in a probabilistic mixture of energy eigenstates with these probabilities. But the density operator itself might be representing a quite different state of affairs. The system might be entangled with the reservoir. It could be in some other state that's not an energy eigenstate with some probability. There's all kinds of things that might be happening. But this justifies, this expression justifies us considering the state of the system as if it were a mixture, a probabilistic mixture of energy eigenstates. And that's generally how you probably looked at the thermal state of a quantum system in a statistical mechanics course, right? All right. But what you're really doing is taking one particular, that picture is really one particular mixture for the real situation, which is described by the density operator. You don't have to really believe that the system is in an energy eigenstate with a certain probability. Okay? Does that make sense? There are some frowns. Let me wait a moment for questions to emerge. Yeah? No. No, it's equivalent as a representation, but it's not equivalent as a statement of fact. Okay? That is to say, if I had a probabilistic mixture of energy eigenstates, then I would have this density operator. Yes. But if I have this density operator, that is not making the assertion that I have a probabilistic mixture of those energy eigenstates. All right? So if I do a, if this is this may be a subtle point. The many different mixtures can lead to the same density operator. We often, in a statistical mechanics, an elementary statistical mechanics course, we'll proceed something like this. We'll say, oh, well, we're going to assume that the system is in one of its energy eigenstates with probabilities given by this Boltzmann factor. Okay. That's asserting that the situation for that system really is the mixture, the recipe, mixed together some energy eigenstates. But you know, when you think about what's happening to the system, do you have really any reason to believe that the system is really in one of those energy eigenstates? Especially since it's continually interacting with its environment, with its thermal reservoir? The answer is no, you don't. Lots of very complicated things might be going on. If I want to ascribe a mixture of states, I might want to ascribe a mixture of all kinds of states. Well, the energy eigenstates are very special. What I'm saying is that for purposes of making statistical predictions, all that matters is the density operator. This is this mixture that I'm talking about. This is a mathematical representation. It's the spectral decomposition of this operator. This way of writing it suggests a particular recipe for building this density operator. And so for purposes of making statistical predictions, you might as well think in terms of that recipe. But don't take that recipe too seriously. Well, the real situation is this. The real situation is the density operator itself, not the underlying mixture. So they're not quite equivalent conceptually. One of them implies the other. But that's not equivalence. A mixture of energy eigenstates with the right factors gives you this. But lots of things give you this. Questions? It is entirely possible that my too long explanation of this will cause you to give undue weight to this point. Okay, but it's just a sign of my lack of confidence that I've really explained it as clearly as it really needs to be explained. So don't overinterpret it. Just realize that when somebody says, oh, well, you know, it's in this energy eigenstate with this probability, you say, well, what you're really saying is it's in the density operator that you would get if you considered that mixture of energy eigenstates. But the real statement you're making is about the density operator, not about the real situation of the microstate of the system. Systems are not generally in their energy eigenstates. There's lots of states. Yeah?
So what you're trying to say is, you get a maximally mixed state by putting it on like plus or minus, and you get a maximally mixed state with 0 and 1.
Right.
Since they have the same density operator, then you see that, oh, it's the same thing.
Sure.
And you just pick the representation that is most convenient for your calculation.
Sure, sure. But you don't necessarily believe that representation of the density operator as a mixture. You don't necessarily believe that mixture is the literal truth about how the density operator came to be the right state. Yeah, Callum.
How would you get your hands on the literal truth?
What?
How would you get your hands on the literal truth?
Well, exactly. In statistical mechanics, your job is to make statistical predictions. The density operator makes all the statistical predictions. So the density operator is really the only thing that you are warranted to say.
Yeah. So okay. You can't say anything about the truth from the density.
Right. Exactly. So I guess what I'm trying to do is say this simple undergraduate physics picture of it's in an energy eigenstate with a certain probability. Okay. That's a picture that you should feel free to use since it gives you the right density operator. But hold in a certain amount of contempt. Okay? Yeah?
This formula gives me all sorts of ideas.
This does?
Yeah.
Good.
Because you smuggled in a new constant k, which looks like 1 over
K is one of those constants that don't mean anything, like the speed of light. This is beautiful. We happen to measure time in seconds and space in meters, so we get this conversion factor, the speed of light, to go from meters to seconds. In the same way, we happen to measure energy in joules and temperature in kelvins. Nice. So we have this constant that we can that continually helps us convert from joules to kelvin, but really they're all energies. So this is just a conversion, and this is a definition of temperature. So this is just to help you connect it back to what you learned in kindergarten, but it's really. Beta is just the parameter that shows up here. Yeah?
So just because two things are the same density operator, they also give the same measurement result, doesn't mean that they are the same.
Doesn't mean that they were sort of built in exactly the same way. So for example, there are many different probabilistic processes that cleave the same density operator. Yes. And it's also possible to get a density operator from entangled states, which is the next thing I want to talk about. Can I go on? So if you look confused, but maybe if we confuse you more, it'll all come clear.
Okay.
Yeah. Some confusion canceling out other confusion. Okay. Now, so what I want to talk about density operators linked with entangled states. I said that there were two situations in which we can't ascribe a definite quantum state to a system. And the first situation was that we simply lack knowledge of the exact preparation of the system. And the other situation was that the system's a subsystem of a larger system that's in an entangled state. And then we can't ascribe a definite state vector to the subsystem. And so what we're going to imagine is that we have a state, yeah.
Density operator that doesn't evolve in time, because if you try to evolve in time using,
well, it's an equilibrium, and so one would expect, among other things, that the equilibrium state should be time independent. So that's a clue about why this is a function of the Hamiltonian operator, the commutes of the Hamiltonian operator, and it's time independent. Very good point. So it comes from, it's going to be connected to the equilibrium. Okay, so so we've got this entangled state of a composite system R and Q. And what I don't care about R, I just want to describe Q. So how do I describe Q? I mean, after all, Q might be the system of interest in my laboratory. I'm going to do an experiment on an electron. But this electron is in an entangled state with like 17 gazillion atoms everywhere. And so I want to not have to carry around a state vector for all 17 gazillion atoms in order to make predictions about experiments on my single electron. So I want to be able to write down a description for a part of the overall system that will allow me to make predictions about experiments that only have to do with that part. Okay? If you can't do this, you're in trouble. Okay, so, all right, so suppose we measure something, an observable A, but A is an observable for Q. And we're going to have lots and lots of superscripts telling us which systems are which, because you just can't avoid it here. Okay, so we're going to measure that. So what is that? What's the expectation of that observable? Well, that observable is actually, of course, an observable in the larger Hilbert space as well. It's the observable given by the operator 1, the identity on system R, tensor product A on system Q. R stands for the rest of the world. Okay. All right, so that's what it's going to be, right? I'm going to set an expectation of that, which, you know, could be monstrous because this could be huge. However, what I'm going to do is I'm going to rewrite this using a basis for R to expand this. A basis to expand the identity. So this is equal to, okay, there's capital Psi of R cubed. And then there's the sum over K of the outer product of the K basis. It's a basis for R, of course. Any old basis, I pick this one. Tensor product with the A cubed all times the Psi. Okay, so here's the idea. Here's the idea. I've got this inner product, right? It's an inner product with this and that operator and that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do part of the inner product. I'm going to apply this state to this operator. I'm going to apply this state to this operator for each one of these terms, and this state to this operator, this state to that state, but that's, it's a partial inner product, right? It's the partial inner product we saw the other day. So if I apply this R vector, this R bra to this R cube ket, I'll get a Q vector out of it, right? And I'm going to do that sort of on both sides and sum over it. So what I actually wind up having and the other part of the inner product, I'm going to rewrite as a trace. But that trace will only be a trace over Q states. So this thing is going to look something like this. Let's see if I can write it down and we can understand what this is like. There's going to be a sum over K, and there's going to be K R acting on Psi R cube, and there's going to be Psi R cube being acted upon by K. And this whole thing right here will be a Q operator. There's a Q bra and a Q ket here on some over K. The whole thing is acting on A Q. All right. And so that's what I got when I first of all did the partial inner product over the R states, and then rewrote the remaining inner product as a trace, because it's the trace of an outer product, right? The trace of this outer product of the two side of the two Q vectors is the inner product of the psi vectors. Well, this is kind of cool, okay? This is kind of cool because if I draw parentheses right here, the things in parentheses depend only on the state, psi r cubed. And it looks like it depends on this basis that I chose, but really I get the same thing for any basis. It depends only on this state, and this depends only on the observable I'm measuring. So I define a density operator rho q, which is equal to the sum over k of exactly this. K of r psi r q psi r q k r. And this is, it's like a trace operation. It's like a trace operation, except you're only doing the trace operation for R. Not using the inner product, but using the partial inner product. So this is the partial trace. The partial trace over R. We could write this, if you will, we could write rho of Q to be the trace over R. That's what this is, of this projection.
And if we do this, then we get that the expectation value of A for Q is just the trace over Q of rho for Q, A for Q. In other words, it's a complete Q description. It's a complete Q description of the results of statistical predictions. It makes statistical predictions about results of measurements on Q by itself. If I only am making observations of Q, all I need to know about this global entangled state is contained in this density operator for Q itself. This density, it's all contained in that density operator. I can assign a mixed state for the subsystem. So let me just write down an example. Let's suppose that we have an entangled state, which is something like alpha 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1. Okay? Just for fun. Okay? So yeah, something like this. This is obviously an entangled state. So what is this projection? Well, of course, when I take the outer product of this with itself, there are four terms. There's an alpha alpha star times the outer product of 0, 0 with 0, 0, plus there's an alpha beta star times the outer product of 0, 0 with 1, 1. And there's an alpha star beta, no, there's a beta alpha star, let's write it that way. Beta alpha star times 1, 1, outer product 0, 0. And there's a beta beta star 1, 1. 1, 1. That should be pretty easy to see where that comes from. I just took this. I took its bra version, and I took the outer product of it. Now, let's take the partial trace over system 1 of this guy. And that should give me a density operator for system 2. To do that partial trace, I go through here and I take the outer products of system 1 and I turn them into inner products. So this is going to give me alpha alpha star, and then the outer product of 0 with itself turns into the inner product of 0 with itself times the outer product of 0 with 0. And then I have alpha beta star, and the outer product of 0 with 1 turns into the inner product 1 with 0 times 0, 1, and so on. plus beta, beta star, 1 with 1, outer product of 1 with 1. Of course, this term and this term are 0. These inner products are 1, and I simply get magnitude of alpha squared times the outer product of 0 plus the magnitude of beta squared times the outer product of 1, which looks like a mixture, a probabilistic mixture of 0 and 1. But that's not the situation at all. This is not a probabilistic mixture of states. It is a subsystem state for a global entangled state. The system 1, 2 is in a pure state. This is not a probabilistic mixture, although it looks just like one. Okay? Now, if you understand why I wrote down everything here, a good exercise is to go through and include all the one two superscripts in this calculation. There are a lot of them, which is why I left them out. And they aren't that, but that'll tell you exactly what's happening. Okay. All right, so let's get some more insight into this. This partial trace thing is kind of cool. Let's apply it to some stuff we looked at before. You'll remember that we previously wrote an entangled state of a system, an entangled state psi of RQ. We wrote that, we picked a basis for R, and we expanded that in terms of a basis, and we had the K R state tensor product with a psi sub K Q state, a Q vector. These are non-normalized. Okay? And the significance of these was kind of interesting. If we measured R in the K basis, then we get the result P of K. That result is just exactly equal to the inner product of this psi Q with itself. And the conditional state of Q, given that measurement outcome, was psi hat sub K, which is 1 over the square root of P of K times this thing that was given by the partial inner product. Oh, yeah, and there was, I guess I could write that. K R psi of RQ is equal to little psi sub K. That was given by a partial inner product. So that was really neat. We could do a lot of stuff. So that tells me, actually, this by itself tells me what the partial trace is, doesn't it? It tells me what the partial trace is. That tells me that rho q is nothing but the sum over k of the outer product of these psi q's with themselves. Right? Yeah, pretty clear? Everybody get it? Because that's what this is, this outer product. And these outer products are exactly what appear here. Now, these guys are not normalized. If I want to write these in terms of normalized states, I have to resort to these conditional states, the conditional states of Q if I got a particular measurement outcome for R. And so I could rewrite this as the sum over K of P sub K times psi sub K Q hat, psi sub K Q hat. And by the way, psi sub K Q hat is not defined if P of K is 0. But that's OK. If P of K is 0, then this term doesn't appear in the sum anyway. But that looks like a mixture. Oh, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So I've got the system R and Q. All right? I've got the system R and the system Q. And it's in this global entangled state, right? And now I make a measurement on R. Okay? I make a measurement on R. And with a certain probability, with a probability P of K, R says, aha, I get the result K for my, now this result. This result was what happens. And if this is the result that happens, there's a conditional state. And I'll write that in a thought balloon, because state's not something that you announce to the world. A state is something that you sort of, you have this conditional state. OK, there we go. You have this conditional state, psi sub k hat for q. And so if I were going to try to describe, this picture occurs with probably P of K. So if I were going to try to describe the state of Q, I would take a mixture of these guys. And that would be this mixture right here. So what so one thing about this state for Q, it's the state of Q before the measurement is made when it's an entangled state. And then somebody makes a measurement on R, and there's some result to that measurement. And so what I have over at Q is a mixture of conditional states. But it's the same row of Q. The state of Q hasn't changed. The density operator hasn't changed. The fact that R performed a measurement over here does not change any statistical prediction that I might make about the behavior of R. Now, if we then announce what the result of the R measurement is, then I'll have not the mixture of these things, but some particular result. Okay, and I'll have to take that information into account. But before I know the outcome of the measurement, nothing has changed statistically for Q. The same density operator. And you get the same density operator no matter which measurement was performed for R. A different measurement of R would lead to a different mixture of conditional states for Q. But the same density operator. Okay? Boy, this is just too fun. Let's do something more. Okay. I mean, this is kind of interesting. I want to do one more thing because it really tells us something about entangled states that's worth knowing. Okay. So I've got my entangled state. Here's my entangled state. Okay. Suppose I take the partial trace of that entangled state not over R, but over Q. Suppose I want to find out what the R state is. I picked to write it this way, but it was my choice to zero in on the R system and my choice of this particular basis. But let's imagine that I'm considering the R system by itself, and I want to take the partial trace over Q. So what is rho of R, which is equal to the trace over Q of the outer product of the global system state with itself? What's that? That's the question I want to answer. And so I write the outer product. Okay, so so rho of R, let me give myself plenty of room, it's the trace over Q of the outer product. Okay, I'm gonna have two sums, aren't I? I'm gonna have a sum over K and a sum over L. And I'm gonna have K R outer product tensor product with psi K of Q. And the other way around, I'm gonna have L of R tensor product with psi sub L of Q. I need two sums because I have a sum for the bra and a sum for the cat. Okay, there it is. And now I'm gonna take the trace over Q. And that's going to turn this outer product into an inner product. Okay? This is easy. I get the sum over K and L of K, or I'm going to write the inner product first. Psi sub L of Q. This is this non-normalized conditional state, the thing I got by the partial, that I would have by a partial inner product. Psi sub K of Q times this. This is great because this is an operator equal to a bunch of scalars times outer products of basis things. This inner product is actually the matrix element. This is actually the matrix element rho sub k l. That's actually the matrix element rho sub k l. It's very, very easy. I actually get the density matrix elements from these inner products. That's neat. What does that tell me? What does that tell me? Well, among other things, I've moved on, haven't I? Among other things, it tells me that the populations, those are those diagonal elements, rho sub kk. What's the population? What's the population? What's a population element for this density operator? A diagonal element of the in for the k guy of the R system. Well, it's just the inner product of psi sub k with itself. Oh, which is exactly the probability that I would get that result in a measurement. Okay, yeah, all right, that makes sense. That's what the populations were. And the coherences are something else. The coherences are something else, but they're not necessarily zero, because these guys are not necessarily orthogonal to each other, right? The coherences are not equal to zero in general. But you know, rho sub r is some Hermitian operator. And so there is a basis that diagonalizes it. There is a basis that diagonalizes the R density operator. The R density operator doesn't depend on my choice of basis. There's some basis, though, that in which the R density operator looks nice. So I'm going to choose, remember the KR basis to diagonalize the density operator for that system. I'm going to make that special choice, because that special choice will give me something that looks especially nice. Okay? And so that means that the density operator will be equal to the sum over k of some eigenvalues p sub k, times the outer product of k with itself. But that means in this expansion over here, it therefore means that psi sub k for q, that these matrix elements, these are going to be zero for k not equal to L. If I choose the diagonal representation, all the coherences are zero. All the coherences, the off-diagonal elements in the density operator, are zero, which means these vectors are orthonormal, or orthogonal, excuse me. The psi sub k's are orthogonal, form an orthogonal set. And I'm really, and for the non-zero ones, the psi sub hat q's are an orthonormal set. And they're part of an orthonormal basis, part of a Q basis. Okay? Part of a Q basis. There may be other elements in the Q basis, but at least we've got this. At least we've got these. Okay? And so I'll point out that I'll let k of q now. This is this q basis element. k of q, equal to the psi hat sub k of q, which is 1 over the square root of this p sub k, because the p sub k is exactly the diagonal terms now are the probabilities of getting that in a k measurement of psi sub k of q. All right? So far, so good? But then I can go back to my original expansion. And that is that the original entangled state is the sum over k of the square root of p sub k times kr tensor product kq. And that is really a neat way to write that entangled state. Generally, if you are going to write the entangled state in terms of a product basis for r and q, I would need a double sum, a sum over the r basis and a sum over the q basis. But if I choose those bases carefully, in fact, if I choose the eigenbases for the density operators for rho and q, it turns out, if I choose those bases carefully, then I can write it this way, where it's only a single sum. And in fact, the coefficients are all real and non-negative. Any entangled pure state can be written in this way. It's a really great simplification. This is sort of the really nice where these guys are orthonormal. So this is an orthonormal set. That's an orthonormal set. This is the really nicest version of this. It's an especially nice version of this, and it's called the Schmidt decomposition. And it is so useful. It's hard, really, to overemphasize it. I really should spend just as much time talking about how important this is as I spent talking about how that thermal density operator wasn't necessarily really a mixture of energy eigenstates. Okay. This has many convenient properties. Okay, many convenient properties. The density operator for R is diagonal in this basis. The density operator for Q is diagonal in this basis. The P sub K's are the non-zero eigenvalues of both rho R and rho Q. They have the same non-zero eigenvalues, the two systems, the two complementary systems, the R system and the Q system. Same non-zero eigenvalues for the density operator. Another thing is, you can ask how many terms are there here. If there's one term, it's a product state. If there are two terms, it's got to be entangled. Or three terms, maybe more entangled. The number of non-zero terms in this expansion, called the Schmidt number, is a kind of a crude measure of how entangled the states are. How many terms are there in your Schmidt decomposition? A lot of things, if you're careful about signs, you can view things like the Bell states, which we gave, you know, in the last homework. The Bell states are really written in terms of Schmidt decompositions, realizing that some of the basis vectors might be minus 0 or minus 1. Okay? So the Schmidt decomposition is the neatest way to write the an entangled pure state. And if you can find the Schmidt decomposition for the thing, it sort of tells you the most, in the most compact form, about that state. Yeah?
So the Q and R did not have the same dimension?
Not necessarily, because the only things that appear here are the terms in which P sub K is not 0. So what that means, the Schmidt number is the same for both of them. If you have a qubit, and it's entangled with the rest of the universe, and I write it in the Schmidt decomposition, how many terms will there be? There'll be two, because the dimension of the qubit Hilbert space is only two, so there can only be two elements in that basis. So there'll be some square root of a row eigenstate. So some square root of something times z times qubit state tensor product universe state plus something times orthogonal qubit state tensor product orthogonal universe state, and that's the entire that's the entire entangled state. The complexity of this sum is limited by the size of the smaller system. Yes? Correct. These don't form the entire basis of Q, and indeed, if I only include the places where this is non-zero, the ones where this is non-zero, these might not include the entire basis for R either. So in some sense, this is true only for the non-zero terms of this sum. And if there are additional sums, it's like having a bunch more terms where these are zero. But the point is that this doesn't have to be the whole basis. These guys can, this orthonormal set can be part of a larger basis for Q, for example. It wouldn't have to be the whole basis. Questions? Okay, so density operators can come from partial traces of entangled systems, partial traces when you have entanglement, and if you pick your basis in the right way, that gives you a lovely representation for the entangled state, the Schmidt decomposition of the entangled state vector. And this is of great use. And it's generic. Any entangled state can be written in this way by judicious choice of these bases. The choice depends on that state. Yeah, Callum. Yes. That's right. Well, doesn't depend on the separation of the subspaces.
Are we thinking subsystems?
Yes.
Subsystems aren't subspaces. They're factors in the tensor problem. Okay.
So it actually depends on the very special form. You have to specify a state for it to use
it. That's right. You have RQ, and that doesn't tell you the Schmidt basis. You don't know the Schmidt basis until you know that. And even then, you maybe have to do a little arithmetic. Okay. So density operators are just what the doctor ordered. They allow us to describe systems which might be part of a larger world. The larger world may be in a pure quantum state, but state vector. But the subsystem, we can make a description of the subsystem by itself in terms of a density operator, which is sufficient to make any kind of predictions on experiments for that subsystem itself. What we have done for the state of the systems, we now want to do for the dynamics of a system. We want to imagine that our system is part of a larger world, and that the larger world may be relevant to the dynamics of that system. The system may not be isolated or informationally isolated. It might interact with the outside world. How do we describe the behavior of the state of the system in the presence of such an interaction? And so that's what we're going to talk about starting now. Open system dynamics. Okay. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about a specific model for how this goes. And I hope on Friday, tomorrow, we're going to then tell you how general this model really is. But we're gonna, today we're going to build a specific model and see what its consequences are. Okay? And so what we have is we have a system Q that we're interested in, and the outside world we're going to call the environment. Environment E, which might be a lot bigger than Q. Okay? Now, and these guys are going to interact with each other. And because they interact with each other, for example, if I start out with a nice pure state of system Q, later on, it might be entangled with the environment, because interactions are really entangled. And if that's the case, then the state that I would ascribe to system Q would be a mixed state. So we can have a pure Q state evolve to a mixed Q state, maybe. I'm not saying that will definitely happen, but that might happen. A pure state might evolve to a mixed state. That means that unitary time evolution will not be a sufficient description for the dynamics of Q. If I just am interested in how the states of Q evolve, I won't be able to describe that by a unitary operator on Q. I'm going to need a more general description of the dynamics. Okay, so let's talk about the environment. Let's talk about the environment and the system. Okay, so some things about the environment and system, and some points in our model. And the first thing is that we're going to assume that the system is initially unentangled with the environment. The system and the environment are uncorrelated with each other in any way. So Q and E are initially unentangled. They're independently prepared. They're independently prepared systems. Okay? The environment is prepared by the outside world. The system's prepared by our system preparation machine. And the second assumption, is that we do not control the initial environment state. The initial environment state is what it is. So the initial environment state we'll take as a given. And we're going to imagine that it's a pure state, which we'll call zero, since that sounds initial. You can call it whatever you like. Okay? E sub zero for environment initial state, something like that. The point here is that this is just something. Now, I'm assuming it's a pure state. Is that a very strong assumption? What if the environment's a mixed state? What if the environment knows is some thermal state or something? Well, this still could be okay, because what you can imagine is that the environment really consists of two parts. There's the near environment and the far environment. And the near environment looks like it's in some mixed state with a density operator. But it turns out that the far environment, which is too far away ever to interact with, is entangled with the near environment. And overall, the environment's in a pure state. See, I can always think of a mixed state as being just a subsystem state for a larger entangled system. Sometimes that's called purification. Okay. I think a mixed state, I think of it as a pure state on a bigger system. So I can always do that. So this is not too, I think this is a, some initial pure state is, I just need to think about a big enough environment. Okay? Over a period of time, we have unitary time evolution of the overall system plus environment. Described by some unitary operator, U. or QE. And this includes interactions between the systems. Okay? And the final thing I want to say is that I don't care about the environment. Sorry. In the sense that the final state of the environment is not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in how the state of Q evolves. So at the end of the day, I'm going to discard the environment. This sounds not very green, this lecture today. But anyway, I'm going to discard the environment, and I'm going to do a partial trace over the environment in order to look at the density operator for Q by itself. Okay? We only care about the final Q state. We don't care what Q did to the environment. We just care what the environment did to Q. OK, so we need a basis for a basis for doing that partial trace. So we need a basis, and I'll just make my favorite letter here, K. For the Hilbert space describing the environment. Okay, there we go. That's all we need. So then once we have this basis, we'll be able to compute the final partial trace over the environment, and that'll be great. So what happens? So okay, the initial Q state is something like this. It's a state for Q and zero for the environment. The environment is pure. This really is a terrible, terribly ungreen one. And then there's time evolution. So psi q 0 e evolves to u q e psi q 0 e. OK, that's what happens, right? That's the new state. This state might be entangled because this unitary operator might turn that product state into an entangled state. And so it's the final Q state, the Q state after. Okay, what's that going to be? Well, it's going to be the trace over the environment of the outer product of this with itself. Okay? The outer product of this with itself, which, leaving off the letters, because I don't have enough room here, but it's pretty easy, is u psi 0 u dash. Okay? That's it. That's my final state. And of course, to do that trace, I'm going to use the sum over the k's. So let's see, that's the sum over the k's, and then I'll have some partial inner product. I'll have k u psi 0 of psi 0 u dagger k. Right? There's the partial trace. Now, let's think about this. Each of these, let's look at this guy. What kind of a guy is this? What kind of a guy is this? Let's see, it's a QE vector. And then I act on it with a QE operator. And then I take the partial inner product with an E vector. And so what do I get? What is this? It's a Q vector, right? It's a Q vector. This part right here is a Q vector. It's a Q ket. And this is a Q rod. Okay? So let's think about what that is. Let's think about what that Q ket is. Clearly, this depends on this state right here, right? On this vector right here. How does it depend on this vector right here? This is a Q vector. It's a Q vector, let's say.
let's say a vector space is the vector in HQ. It's not necessarily normalized, I can't say that. Okay, it might be zero. But how does it depend on the initial size state? And the answer I'm looking for is, it depends linearly. If I take the sum of two of these guys, well, this whole business is a linear business, right? I'll get the sum of the two contributions. If I take a linear combination of these guys, I'll get a linear combination of the contributions. It depends linearly on the input state size. All right, so what I have here, what this represents, is a rule. You give me a vector, I calculate a new vector that depends on the old vector in a linear way. What's that sort of rule called?
It's a linear function.
It's a linear function from a vector space to itself, which is often called an operator. This is an operator. Okay? This is an operator. We're going to define. This defines an operator. That's all an operator is, right? Okay. We're going to define the operator A sub k, it's a q operator. If you act on psi, which is a q vector, you get this inner product, this partial inner product of k of the environment, and u of qe, psi q, let me write it in a bigger place here. Kr u qe psi q 0.
So what is r?
R. R. R is really E. R is really E. Sorry, I changed my name for my external system from the rest of the world to the environment. Okay? Environment is a more traditional way of talking about the rest of the world when you talk about dynamics. So I'm sorry. If I've written R as a subsystem anywhere since I've written down open system dynamics, change it to an E and it'll be correct. Alright, so here it is. Let's think about this. This depends on three things. This operator, A sub k, which is a q operator, it depends on a bunch of other stuff. It depends on the initial state of the environment. It depends on the interaction between the environment and the system. And it depends on k, the basis for the environment, so states. And so these top two things depend on the circumstances. But it also depends on our choice of basis for describing the environment. Okay, so this depends both on the interaction with the world and what's going on in the universe, and on a choice we made for representing what's going on. Okay, so the A sub k's do have some element of our choice, and you might be able to get a different description by just picking a different basis, a different description of the same process, which you give you a different operator. By the way, this is called a Krauss operator. A Krauss operator, after Professor Krauss, who is one of the people who really helped us sort out the mathematics of open system dynamics. Wrote a great book called States, Effects, Operations, which is an attempt to give quantum mechanics an axiomatic basis, but in fact is a tremendously practical mathematical result. Okay, so, all right. So now let's write down what the state of system Q is after the interaction with the environment. Well, let's see. It's this sum, but now we can write the sum in terms of Krauss operators, right? In fact, it's very simple. It's the sum over k of Krauss operator acting on initial state times the dagger of that. And of course, what this is a map on density operators, because this is the initial density operator. This is the density operator before. So what we've got a map on density operators, where I take the initial density operator, and it goes to a final density operator, which is some function of the initial density operator. And that function is the sum over k of ak times the initial density operator times ak dagger. I've worked it out for pure states, because pure states are interesting. But you notice that this function is linear in the density operator. It's linear in the density operator. So if I fed this function a mixture of two density operators, I get the mixture at the output. This is a linear function on density operators. And so once I know how it acts on pure states, I can mix them together and get mixed states. So this is a map on density operators. It's a linear map on density operators. What would we call a linear rule that takes an operator and gives you an operator? A super operator. It's an operator on operators. It's an element of B of B of H. Okay? Turns out these are very useful. Or at least some of them are. Okay. So E is linear in the input, and that means it's a super operator. And if I give you the Krauss operator, I can tell you how any initial Q state evolves to a final Q state. That's pretty cool. Let me tell you one thing. So let's suppose we start out with an initial state like this, this evolves under the action of our superoperator to the state rho. Okay? Mixed state rho, perhaps. Well, you know, for this to be a legitimate density operator, it better have trace 1, right? It better have trace 1. So the trace of rho is equal to the trace of the sum over k of ak rho ak dagger. Sorry, not rho, it's a psi ak dagger. That's going to have trace 1. But of course, that's this trace. You see that this combination, this is just an outer product. And what the trace does is it turns outer products to inner products. That's all the trace does. Right? And so this is equal to the sum over k of inner product of psi a dagger k ak psi. I can take the sum inside, and I get psi sum over k, ak dagger, ak psi. And that had better be 1. That had better be 1 for any normalized psi. What does that tell me about this operator in parentheses? It has to be the identity. So there's a normalization condition which says that these Krauss operators have to satisfy that the sum of A dagger A is the identity. Not just any set of operators will do, but if you have a set of operators that satisfies this, maybe so. Okay, so what this these cross operators are brilliant. They're a complete internal description of the effect of the environment on the Q state. If you find out the initial Q state, if you know the initial Q state, Q interacts with the environment, and then you can figure out the final Q state. And that's good, because the environment may be big. And there may be lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of things going on in the environment, all represented by this, all parts of this unitary dynamics that I don't care about, that have that are really complicated to keep track of, and all I really care about is how the state of Q is affected. And representing things by a set of cross operators, representing things by a set of normalized cross operators, gives me a description of what the environment does to the system without having to keep track of everything that's going on in the environment. It gives me an intrinsic description of the dynamics of the open system Q, the way that its state evolves in time. The cross operators have built into them any internal dynamics of Q, and built into it all the parts of the interaction with the environment and the internal dynamics of the environment that are relevant to changes in the state of Q. So it's a beautiful description. And we'll give you some examples of how this is useful. It's great to see some examples right around. Oh, and by the way, you're going to get, I guess, the homework today, or is it already done?
After this class.
After this class, you get the homework. And you'll be able to work the first three parts of the homework immediately. But you probably will have to wait till after at least the first 15 minutes of class on Friday to work the rest of the homework. So. Don't worry too much about it. Okay. Maybe you'll put it off a little bit. I don't know. That could be. All right. So let's take a couple of examples. Let's suppose we have unitary evolution on Q. Well, then we have a single cross operator. Which we could call A sub 0. And what is that A sub 0? It's just the unitary evolution operator on Q. So that rho naught goes to rho, which is the sum over the cross operators, but there's only one of them, of A rho naught A dagger. I didn't mean naught, just A rho A dagger, which is, of course, U rho naught U dagger, which is rho. That's how density operators evolve if the system is undergoing unitary time evolution. So our previous rule for how systems evolve in time is a special case. A special case in which there's only one cross operator. And of course, that one cross operator had better be unitary, because if you add up A dagger A over all the cross operators, you better get one. Yeah, it didn't. Right? So that's why it has to be unitary. Okay, so. All right, let's do another one that's even more interesting. Let's suppose that the system undergoes a unitary evolution, but I don't know which one. That is to say, there's some random process. And if the random process comes up this way, there's one unitary operator. And if it comes up that way, there's some other unitary operator. I flip a coin and decide how to set my magnetic field or something like that. Okay? So this is what we might call the random unitary evolution. Okay, so UK applies with probability P sub K. All right, but I don't know which unitary is applied. You might think of this as, like I said, your intermagnetic field, but you don't know the magnetic field exact or something. Okay, then we let A k equal to the square root of pk times uk. That square root will do the job, as you'll see. Now, these guys are not unitary or even particularly interesting. As operators, they're sort of squashed unitaries. So let's see how they work. So rho naught goes to rho, which is equal to the sum over k of ak rho naught a k dagger, which is equal to the sum over k. Well, I'm going to get a factor of the square root of pk out of each one of these guys, so it'll be a pk. And then I'll get uk rho uk dagger, which is exactly right. It's a mixture of what I would have gotten if I'd evolved according to this unitary operator, weighted by the probability that that unitary operator applies. Pretty good, huh? Pretty good. Now I want to show you that the cross representation of this operator sum here is sufficient to describe something like what happens in a measurement. What happens to the system if you made a measurement of the system? So let's suppose we make a measurement. And we'll do something simple. Okay? And we'll follow the so-called projection rule, which is that after you make a measurement of the system, and you get a particular result, then afterwards you're in that eigenstate. Right? Everybody know that rule? That's what they often say, that this is really what happens in a measurement. But except when we actually look at what's happening in a real measurement, that's almost never what's really happening. But you can do this in principle. You can't make a second measurement on the location of the photon, but the photon drawn it, you absorb it. Okay? So the projection rule is almost never literally true, but it's always a nice idealization. So what that means is, if I start out with psi, then with probability, P sub k, which is the magnitude of k psi squared, I wind up in, let's say, k. All right? That's what happens. That's a mixture. This is clearly a mixture. This state occurs with this probability. So this is a job for density operator, right? This is a job for density operator. This final state will be something like the sum over k of these p sub k's times the eigenstates. That's going to be the final state. I'm making a measurement, but I'm not conditioning on the result. I just know that a measurement was made following the projection rule. Okay, let's see. The state, the initial density operator is psi, and that goes to this rho, which is the sum over k of pk times, well, let's see, let me write out what pk is, actually. Pk, of course, is the k psi squared times k. All right, let's see, that's the sum over k. The magnitude state of k psi squared is, of course, just this times this complex conjugate, right? So I get k psi times psi k times the outer product of k with itself. All right? Oh, you know, this is just these are just scalars. I could stick it in between. I could stick it in between here. And, and wind up with psi going to the sum over k of k psi. Psi k. Okay, so these are my complex numbers. This is that outer product. But now I can reinterpret this as. Here's an operator. Here's my initial state. Here's an operator, which happens to be the dagger of this operator. And so I choose a sub k being equal to kk, and then psi goes to sum over k, a sub k, psi, k.
A is a pay barrier.
All right? Neat. But you know that projection rule, I hate that projection rule, okay? That projection rule is just, it's just so unphysical. So I'm going to imagine that I wind up in some, and you don't have to write this out because this is totally trivial. I'm going to wind up in some phi sub k, but I don't know what it is. Okay? Right? I don't know what that is. It could be some state. I don't know. So that means that the mixture that I wind up in is a mixture of the phi sub k's. What phi sub k is nothing but the state that I wind up in if I make the measurement and get the result k. And that's that some of them might be the same. There's the no photon state, where the photon got absorbed here or photon. I don't care. These might be the same or might not. And then, of course, I got the phi sub k's here. And so I have phi sub k's here. And so I have phi sub k's here and here. Oh, now these really do look like something and something dagger. K is now just this outer product. It looks like K basis vector and returns phi sub k. That's what the that's what it does. Kind of got a nice dynamical feel to it. And then this is true. Even if the projection rule is not satisfying. So I can describe the result of this measurement, which is a kind of interaction with the environment. It's just that the environment happens to occur to include the measurement apparatus and the experimenter. All open system dynamics. Questions? Yeah?
Are they normal?
Are they normal? What are normal? No.
That crossover is?
Not necessarily. These aren't.
Oh, I see.
Okay. This isn't. No. I don't know anything about the cross operator. They can be anything. In fact, if you give me a set of operators of any sort whatsoever satisfying this relation, I can cook up an environment and an interaction which will have a dynamics with that set of cross operators.
Is there an algorithm for that?
There's an algorithm for that. It's a kind of a tedious construction. You have to construct that unitary operation, but what you basically can show that there is one that does that. And so it's not too bad. Yeah?
I had a related question, I guess. What can you actually learn? If I gave you the crash operators, what can you learn about the environment?
That's a really cool question. What can you learn about the environment? You can learn all kinds of things. I'm not sure we'll get to it, but for example, of course, since the thing starts out in a pure state, the system and environment end up in a pure state. So we know that the eigenvalues of the density operator of the environment are exactly the eigenvalues of the density operator of the system. Okay? And so we know something about how mixed the environment becomes, because we know how mixed the system becomes. We can find out some other things like that. But in fact, there are lots and lots and lots and lots of models of environment and interaction, which lead to the same Krauss operators. And so you can say a few things, but not too many. Because everything about the environment that doesn't affect how the Q state changes is completely hidden. Yeah?
How do we get Krauss operators?
Well, you can get them by the, if you actually knew the interaction with the environment,
You knew the unitary operator, and you knew had a description of the environment. You could obtain them by the partial inner product of k, u, you could obtain them this way. Okay? You could actually find out what the operator is. So if you have a particular model of the environment and everything like this, you could do this. Or it might be that after many experiments, you figured out how the state of Q would change in a particular circumstance, and that would you could encode that information as a set of Krauss operators. Because after all, that's how you actually get dynamics anyway, by doing experiments and figuring out what the laws are that obey it. So you can either do the empirical route, or if you have a good theory of the universe, you can derive it from this. That's what these things are. Other questions? Okay. See you next time.